McKenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning and welcome back to Happy Hour here on K104. Another episode of the show with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I'm Frankenberry, and good morning to you ladies. How are we doing?
Ducky. Yeah, I guess I'm ducky too. Starting to feel a lot like summer.
It is. Finally, yes. Finally some consistently warm temperatures because, you know, that roller coaster we were on for a while is just so annoying.
Oh, yeah. I know. Crummy April and most of May. Amazing. But we'll take it, right? It's here. Thank God.
Like I've said before, the cat's got open windows, so they're happy that it's here.
So how was everybody's holiday weekend? The unofficial start of summer was last weekend. How did you guys like it?
Well, it was good. But it wasn't like a relaxing weekend for me because my husband and I decided that it would be a brilliant idea to, we have a small place out in Pennsylvania, we go out on weekends sometimes, to paint the house ourselves.
Oh
my gosh. So, and thanks to your father who has owned a painting business for how long? What, 40 years or something?
55.
Okay. And he gave me good advice on whether or not to use a primer and which paint to use, and he was 100% right, because the house went from a dark red to a beautiful white, painted the window trim black, and so paint worked out great, but boy, he gave me... And we're not done yet, but I got a renewed appreciation for people like him who do what they do. It's a lot of work. So didn't get a whole lot of relaxed time in, but it's okay.
Well, at least you've got a finished result you can look at and say, or almost finished result and look at and say, well, we did that.
Absolutely. There was definitely some high fives between Greg and I when we wrapped up for the weekend.
Yes, I remember.
Oh, it's all good.
I remember when I was in the old house with the ex that we decided to paint the house, and so I got some help from her son at the time, but it was mostly just me. But I do remember getting on a ladder and being way. And I think back on it now, and I'm thinking, Steve, you did that by yourself?
Yeah.
You know, you put the ladder up basically as high as it would possibly go, where it could easily bend, and you went up to above the second floor. Holy crap! You're an idiot.
Yep.
I mean, not that anybody helping me out was going to be able to catch me if I fell, but, you know, at least I could have thought of maybe putting a couple of mattresses in the driveway just in case.
Right. Well, worked out all right. So you're still here.
I got to hand it to
people like you who attempt to do those kind of things without calling a professional. Like, I have no desire. I don't want to. No. I'm having a hard enough time keeping my house clean. And in fact, not only am I having a hard enough time keeping my house clean, and that only requires me being able to operate a vacuum cleaner and maybe a mop. But I'm like, I even decided, like, today I am really going to put the full court press on my housekeeper. Be like, hey, come on, let's get with the program. I miss you. I really do.
Well, that could be your next Facebook video. You set your camera up, and let's get a video of you in your 5-inch heels vacuuming the house.
That would be kind of cool.
That would be kind of dangerous. I will say this though: in the last week, since I last spoke to you guys, I went to an official. Like, I left to do something other than my office, like a business that finally opened up, I actually went to, and God punished me afterwards because I had to go. This business happened to be across the river in Newburgh, and it happened to also be my Botox doctor, and I'll tell you all about that in a minute. But on my way back So, you know, I haven't ventured anywhere other than my office to a business in, since we've been locked down. I mean, none of us have really, right? So on my way back, I'm crossing, which means I haven't really been in my car, and I certainly haven't had an occasion to use my Easy Pass. And so picture this, if you will. I'm excited to have been going to my Botox doctor. When you walk out of a Botox place, neither one of you will know this, but hopefully there are some people within the sound of my voice who will appreciate it. You walk out basically looking like a pincushion, because you do. And so I'm in the car, and I got, you know, the music's playing, it's sunny outside, I look like a pincushion. I get to the bridge to head back to my casa, and all of a sudden the Easy Pass gate goes down. I'm in an Easy Pass only lane because I have Easy Pass. Gate goes down, car's behind me, I can't barrel through, although I did think about it, all pincushioned out the way I was. And I got stuck at the bridge waiting for somebody to come to my window, look me in my pincushion face, and ask me for $1.75. While I start arguing with him, what are you asking me for money? I have Easy Pass. He's like, no, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. Yes, I do. I look to where my Easy Pass should have been and has been for the entire time that I've had it, and it ain't there. My what? Easy Uh-oh. Pass... My Easy Pass thingamabob is gone. It's gone. Now, I immediately say to myself, who stole my freaking Easy Pass?
Right.
Now, I got no actual cash money on me. I'm literally digging for change. Behind me. Yes, I'm now that person. I'm that person that I hate.
I was just going to say that.
I am that person that I hate. I am embarrassed. I have needle marks all over my face. Happy to have them, but they were there. And I don't know what to do. So now I go home, and I'm literally, like, I'm driving home going, who stole my Easy Pass? Who stole my Easy Pass? I start calling anybody who's had even the remotest access to my car, which is all, like, two people. And I start accusing them of stealing my Easy Pass. You must have stolen my Easy Pass. Well, I get out of my car, I look under the seat, and wouldn't you know, under the passenger seat is my Easy Pass. Along with the tape that it was stuck to. Right. Now I'm even more mad at Easy Pass, because it can't take, if I were trying not to have my Easy Pass register, if I wrapped it up in tinfoil, put it in the glove box, and tried not to have it charge me, it would charge me. The freaking thing is under a seat. And my little car is just under a seat, and it won't register at all at the worst possible time.
especially when you have no cash.
No cash, and I am bleeding from my face.
Sorry. That is so Jonas Spillboard. Now, the question is, were you able to at least come up with the $1.75? I mean, eventually you got home.
I literally took my wallet and I start shaking the coin portion out in this poor guy. He's got his hands cuffed. I'm shaking it out. There's a paper clip. There's the back to an earring. There's some foreign change in there. Finally, he's like, I think I got $1.95, which was 20 cents too much. And I'm like, keep the change.
Oh no! I'll make you bet that poor teller immediately called their better half. Hey, guess what? Guess what I got today? I got a 20-cent tip.
You don't understand how crushed I was, guys. I was so happy to have, like, my little tiny slice of normalcy, you know, tracing off to the Botox doctor after 3 months of needing to go to the Botox doctor. And then that happened.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think for some of us out there, I don't know if the word needing is really appropriate there, Miss Spillboar.
Oh, I needed it.
I'm surprised that that's an allowable thing to do right now.
So I guess it's kind of like elective, you know, how you can now, they've opened up some elective surgery. But let me tell you this. So let me give you the bad part of that. Not the bad part. The doctor was extremely careful. In other words, one patient in the office at a time. You've got to ask, you are asked a series of questions when you make the appointment. You are asked the same series of questions as you sit in the parking lot, not allowed to enter the building until you answer those questions again. You have to wear a mask going in and a new mask coming out. And before you even enter the atrium, you need to take your temperature. They take your temperature for you, and if it's high, you're not getting in. So they are being extremely cautious. Like, in my opinion, a little overly cautious, but okay, better safe than sorry.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, the doctor's going to be very close to your face, so I would be overly cautious as well. I mean, yes. I called. I don't need to see the chiropractor, but I got a bill in the mail, and I called, and I was like, you know what? I've got the money. I might as well just pay it now. So I called. They weren't in the office at the moment, but the message has you can make an appointment, but you have to get tested first.
Oh, wow. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, well, because, I mean, and again, he's a chiropractor. He's on top of you for, 10, 15 minutes when it comes to, whatever it is, whatever it is that you need.
Right.
So he's extra close to you for all that time. So, yeah, you got to get a test.
So just out of curiosity, though, because logistically speaking, if you get a test on Monday and your appointment is on Friday and on Wednesday you're exposed, I don't know if that's like the best protocol. No, I mean, what's the time frame? Like, did he say when you had to get tested in terms of when you can make your appointment?
No, the message is fairly the message is fairly generic in that regard. I'm sure that I'm sure it's more explained to you when you do call and get through to get through to one of the receptionists. So, but again, it's an extra precaution, but I understand it. When it comes to my Memorial Day weekend, by the way, I did what you've done on a regular basis, and I don't do it very often, but I got on the phone with two of my best friends from college. We did it by Zoom.
And now
the first time we did it, which was about a month ago, we couldn't figure out how to get us all on the screen at once, a montage of people. So, and then when we get on the phone the second time, it was doing what it did last time. Only the person talking would be seen. And then my buddy Tom goes, "Steve, try swiping left." And I was like, "Oh my God, I see all three of us."
But cool.
it was so nice. It was such a great distraction from all of this. I just kicked back. We told old stories. We talked about our current lives. We made lots of stupid jokes, and it was really, really nice. I think we might have been on the phone for 2 hours. I think.
Good for you!
Wow,
a little virtual Memorial Day non-grilling party.
Exactly. Even Celie downstairs didn't do anything. I know her sister came over for a couple of minutes and they had some pizza, but that was about it. And if there's not a family get together downstairs, something's up in the world.
I don't know. I'm glad you enjoyed that. I mean, we've done that a couple times over the last couple of months.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? It's just, even if it wasn't for all this craziness, I would do it anyway. I mean, just to be able to see them both again.
Right.
I visited my buddy Tom I saw him for the first time in like 25 years, 2 years ago when, they were having this kind of poetry con, with him and his group of folks down there in Norfolk. So I went down to visit and I joined in, but that was it. First time in 25 years. So being able to see them like that, it's absolutely fantastic.
It is cool. I mean, it's definitely, here we are doing the show remotely and we're on the phone and it's good, but it's definitely a different experience when you can communicate with someone and see their face and they can see yours.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, it was, that plus just kicking back in the apartment and doing a little bit of writing over the weekend, and it was perfect.
For you.
Yeah, well, for me, yes.
And John, your wildlife adventures
continue.
You were complaining about birds chirping too early last week.
I had birds and bees and foxes. I witnessed a chipmunk throwdown
it's just so funny. I mean, I love these little critters, but I could do without the giant bird-sized bees in my face. I got a little bad issue going on. And yeah, and when did a bird, I have never, I don't think, in my life experienced birds singing and chirping in literally the wee hours, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, is that it? Are we an upside down world? I mean, we kind of are. Like, has that happened to anybody or ever?
I've heard them in the 3 o'clock hour, and I'm like, God, you're early.
Really?
1 o'clock in the morning. Maybe somebody's That's punching like, you. Maybe they're like, got a little recording out there.
Yeah, they're still sleeping, but they want to make it appear as if they're on the job.
That could be. I mean, I did kind of think, I'm like, well, maybe the little foxes that are living next door to my house are out and about, and maybe this was the bird's way of warning other birds. I don't know.
Certainly possible. And, I mean, I know it's, you know, now that it's the start of summer, he's back up the hill in the big kind of, it almost looks like an old corn silo, but it's kind of a mesh thing. But the owl that sometimes is underneath me in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I realize that they're nocturnal creatures, but man, I would hear him at all hours. Just like every now and then he'd kind of wake up and go, oh, I think I should do this.
Oh my God.
And then he'd go back to sleep. You know, and then and he had a little pal down there, so I'm sure every now and then she punched him in the arm. Hey, do your job.
Is he in a cage inside? Or
oh, no, he was. No, the two of them were free in the garage during the winter months. And they just, they basically hang out. She's got a couple of bird type, you know, sticks type platforms up in the wall. And they were cool as heck.
Wow. Owls are so cool.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I don't have any owls living near me. I have eagle, which is really cool.
Oh yes, you've mentioned that. Now, what does he do? Does he kind of fly around the river? He
flies around the river, and you guys, I'm sure you've probably seen one a time or two in your life, but it's like you see him coming. They have this; they're very, very majestic, and they have this slow, methodic kind of flight to them, and you just know it. Like it's unmistakable. And they're just so fun to watch. And then half of the time, I'm grabbing my phone, not just enjoying it in the moment and trying to record it so that I can post it on Facebook. And then I'm sitting there looking through the camera, and then I'll realize that I didn't have the camera on. So, like, I lost out on both ends. But I can't get enough of them. They're just so really fun to watch. And I know that sounds like a nerdy thing, but it really, really is.
Oh, it's not nerdy at all. I was, when I still lived in my apartment in Hyde Park, I was leaving one day. It was a Saturday morning. And I've never seen an eagle in person. So I'm driving. Mm-hmm. And there's one part to my left on Route 9 there as you've just passed through Hyde Park, across from where, say, the grounds of Vanderbilt are. Where it's just kind of a couple of rolling hills, no trees. And man, did I see one come down. It was like watching a crop duster. He was so close to the ground, and he was absolutely beautiful. And the wingspan, oh my Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes.
Well, and you don't get tired of them because, growing up, they're so rare and borderline extinct, and it's just awesome that they're back around again.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, and one little last fun fact about that is I didn't realize this till it happened, but apparently it is illegal to keep an eagle feather. Like if you find an eagle feather, I think I don't know if it's a federal law. You're not allowed for some reason. It's a law that you can't keep it, and I have no idea why that is.
I was just going to say, what the hell? Where did that come from?
Right. What's the motivation there? Is it so that people don't run around trying to pluck eagles? I don't know, but I found an eagle feather in my driveway, and I ain't going to tell you what I did with it. But
and whatever you do, don't tell us about the tag on the mattress either.
That's right. If anybody ever searches my house, I may be going to the pokey. Someone better bail me out.
Jonna in an orange jumpsuit. You'd hate
that. Before. I've heard that before, but I don't know that is an interesting law. I'm sure there's a reason for it. It's got to be a reason.
Well, it could be what you said at first. It's basically to stop people from wanting to collect them. because you know humans are idiots, and they, you know, and they're like a scourge sometimes. So if you know, people would be climbing up, you know, mountainsides to try to grab eagle feathers.
Well, and right, and to me, so that would make sense. You want to make sure you're keeping the eagle safe any way you can. Therefore, it's illegal to possess an eagle feather. Now, that said, when I found a feather in my driveway, it ain't going back inside the eagle, right? I ain't going to be like, here, eagle, let me poke this back in your ass and you're your butt. Sorry, sorry.
In a cartoon, it might, but not in real life.
Well, I hope you did the right thing with the feather, Jonna. Otherwise, you're going to get some anxiety.
Oh, yeah. I definitely don't want any anxiety, do I?
And who would possibly know about anxiety these days?
You know,
Come on.
I think that our segues are just steadily getting worse.
Oh, they are. That's why I love them. You know, our segues are like really obviously bad dad jokes.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, I am very, very proud and honored to have as our guest Lori Manny Lentini. She is the author of a brand spanking new book, Anxiety Insights, What Gets to Us and What Gets Us Through. She deals with anxiety herself, both of her children. She works for a major organization that serves about 14,000 people with mental health disorders, and she is on a mission to help those who deal with anxiety and mental health issues, as well as really, really passionate about getting rid of the stigma that mental illness should be treated unseen any differently than a medical illness. And to make matters even more exciting, this is the latest release of my publishing house, Little Pink Press. So when we come back, we will have Lori Manny Lentini, anybody who deals with anxiety. She's wonderful. She's going to be a great resource, and I suggest you tune in.
All right. This is Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. And like Carol said, we've got our guest, Lori, on the way, and we're going to be right back. So you stick with us.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And you're listening to Happy Hour here on K104. And we're back for segment number two with our guest, and of course, with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. So you know all about Lori, right, Carol?
I sure do. So our guest today, so honored and privileged and appreciative to have her with us, is Lori Manny Lentini. She is the author of a brand new book, Anxiety Insights, What Gets to Us and What Gets Us Through. And what makes me even more proud and appreciative to have her is this is the latest release under my publishing company, Little Pink Press. And Lori has been phenomenal to work with. This is a really, really important piece of work to help anybody dealing with mental illness and anxiety issues. And certainly, we've got our hands full with that more now than ever. So let me tell you a little bit about Lori. She is a respected mental health advocate who lives with an anxiety disorder and works as senior vice president of a large not-for-profit agency in New York, serving over 14,000 people a year with mental illness, developmental disabilities, and substance abuse disorders. Her experience in the mental health field as an executive, patient, and parent of grown children with mental health issues culminate together in a richly honest and authentic voice with universal appeal. Amen to that. She is a sought-after corporate leadership trainer specializing in professional development, coaching, and culture transformation. She has taught seminars at corporate events and conferences on staff emotional well-being, cultural diversity, joy at work, team building, managing multi-generational teams, leave policies, and supporting people with illness and disabilities at work. She has a master's degree in human resource management and counseling and is trained in mental health first aid and suicide prevention, known as Question, Persuade, Refer. She is a trainer for a Hero's Journey workshop and seeking certification as a mental health first aid trainer and, again, author of the brand new book, Congratulations, Anxiety Insights. Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carol. I appreciate it. And I feel the same. I'm working with the Little Pink Press has been a wonderful experience, and I thank you for bringing my book to life with me.
It's an important piece of work. I said that, and it's been a privilege to work with you. So we like it usually to start with, what's the backstory? Why did you want to write this book, and what do you hope to do for people with it?
Well, I have a lot to say about that, so I will get started. I mean, it really was a combination of reasons. You know, one, as you indicated, I've been advocating for mental health, you know, equality, access, and treatment for almost 30 years professionally, while I was also raising two children with anxiety and depression. And I began to realize as they got older and became adults that I missed so many signs of what they needed and what could have been different to help them with their anxiety, while, you know, layering on top of that the fact that I live with anxiety. And as I started a couple of years ago to be more open about that and talk with people, it honestly seemed like almost everyone I spoke to was either struggling with anxiety, a mental health issue, or was supporting or, you know, loved someone with that. It was almost like no one could escape that. And I really decided that I wanted to do more to end the stigma around mental health and the loneliness, because it's once you share it and you really talk to people and they open up, you start to see that you're really not alone, and almost everyone is living with anxiety or loves someone who experiences it, whether it's a short-term issue, you know, due to something that's going on in their life, or whether it's a long-term diagnosis and it's a lifelong struggle. So all of that was, you know, kind of rattling around in my head. And then a few years ago, my daughter and I took a trip to Vegas for my birthday. I'm, you know, approaching my mid-50s. And we were celebrating my birthday. And over dinner, we were just really talking deeply about life and our goals and our dreams and, you know, kind of heavy stuff, what we were looking to do. And realized at that point in time that there's really two things in my life that I wanted to do. And one of them was to write a book so that I could share any insights that I had with other people, start the conversation so I could also learn from them and really get mental health out of the shadows, because it doesn't belong there. And my goal is to end the stigma of mental health in my lifetime. And being on getting up there in years, I figured I needed to get going. So I felt a sudden urgency. And I was talking with my daughter, who is, she is a resident psychiatrist at Northwestern. And she was in medical school at the time. And, you know, she agreed that that was something that we could both do more about. And she wanted to help. So together, we started with the idea of writing this book together. And that's what we did.
And what you've done with this, and it's amazing. So it's really powerful on many levels. One of which is people tend to feel ashamed if they think they're having mental health issues, and as a result, don't seek help where their help is available, or like you said, lonely because they don't want to talk about it. They feel like something, they're damaged or something's wrong with them. And here you have you and your daughter so courageously coming out and say, yeah, we both deal with this. And it hasn't stopped your daughter from achieving a lifelong dream of becoming a psychiatrist herself. So it gives inspiration and hope and education all wrapped up in one book.
That's what we're hoping to offer. I want to change the dialogue. I want to change it so that we talk about panic attacks, depression, suicidal thoughts, the same way we talk about diabetes until it becomes normal. They're both health conditions, and there really needs to not be a distinction.
I agree with you. And reading your book, it was an eye-opener for me as well. And then the other aspect of your book, so it's not only it's giving you some knowledge and information about mental illness and anxiety, also coping strategies that work and those that don't, and within the book, and you sharing your own personal story and your daughter's journey and your son's journey with anxiety, you have mini memoirs of people who deal with certain issues. Do you want to speak to that for a moment about some of the...
Yeah, I would love to. And, you know, I call them my worry warriors, and I'm so grateful to them for also being bold enough to share their story. So what happened is as I started writing the book, I just couldn't contain myself, and I started talking to everyone in my life about it. And as I spoke with folks, you know, I mean, these are all, every single one of them is someone I know that's in my life. And they started sharing their stories, and they were so powerful that I thought they would really, really add different elements and give folks the opportunity. You know, everybody's anxiety affects them differently. It manifests differently. They handle it differently. So to see a variety of stories on how, you know, so maybe someone will connect with one of them more than another one, and it'll be able to help them. But the real point that I was looking to make in adding their mini memoirs is that they're all real people in my life, and that's really their first name, and they're proud of who they are and how they're managing it. And that's really the statement we're trying to make. You don't need a fake name, because we're just real people, and we're doing just fine.
So I have a person in my life. I'm not an anxiety expert, but, you know, I have plenty of people in my life who have suffered from it. I mean, and I think, you know, there are probably a lot of people who maybe suffer from it in varying degrees. Like, for example, I have a person in my life who Carol knows, my much younger boyfriend, much younger, mm-hmm. Who does stand-up comedy. And when he will get nervous before he does any sort of performance, but he hasn't sought out treatment for that beyond, like, for example, he bought this buzzer, and you're supposed to stand up there, and when you're feeling a little anxious, you hit the buzzer, and that takes your energy away from feeling anxious. And then there was one program that, and this is the God's honest truth, one program said, or an author said, when you're feeling anxious, when you're about to give a performance, squeeze your butt cheek. and that is supposed to, if you perform with your butt cheeks squeezed or squozen, I don't know what the past tense of squeezed is, that is supposed to ease your anxiety. And he has tried all of these sort of snake oil approaches to anxiety. And maybe I could ask you, as somebody who has written about it, has lived with it, is there anything to those types of treatments for it, or is it just ridiculous?
Well, I mean, what works for each person is different. I find it hard to believe that that would be effective for too many folks. I would be focusing on that more than what I was trying to say, so I don't know how that would work.
Right.
But there are, I mean, you know, anxiety is on the rise. We've got COVID. We've got the most stressed out generation in our history. So there's just a lot of stress in the world right now, and I think there are a lot of marketing avenues to that. You know, there's everything being sold out there under the guise of being able to help you with your anxiety and reduce your stress. And for some folks, some of it'll work, you know, aromatherapy or what, you know, whatever's out there. But really, you know, I believe if you have a mental health issue, and like you said, it could be something, you know, as small as you, when you public speak, it, you know, you get nervous and you get very anxious. But, you know, that's a situation that happens not that often, and you can kind of avoid it. So that's, you probably don't need treatment for that. But then there's folks who live with it every day, every minute of, you know, they're thinking about, they're having anxious thoughts, and they're having trouble handling it. And I think the really big thing about insight, we have a couple of chapters in here that you know, my daughter wrote from her medical, you know, background. And one is about children, because I missed a lot of signs when my kids were growing up, which you'll see in there. And, you know, the other one is just about all of the importance of having the insight of being able to recognize yourself as someone that has anxiety or a mental health issue, because without the insight of being able to say, hey, I'm somebody who has a mental health issue, because there's a lot of derogatory stigma attached to that. And if you can't admit that you are in that category, then you're not going to seek treatment. And that is really the key to it. And, you know, so many folks can get help and really live a much less stressed life.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's great to enlighten people to not to be afraid to get treated for it. And I like that your mantra is, you know what, that doesn't have to be a dirty little secret. We should be able to talk about it like we talk about any other thing that ails us. I completely get that. And yet people are, I think I'm willing to bet that some people don't realize that what they have is something that is treatable. Like, for example, if I use that example again, maybe it's normal to be nervous before you give a presentation, or it's normal to be nervous when you're doing some sort of public speaking, or normal to be nervous when you're on the radio. So I guess people don't really feel like they're broken in that situation. And what would you say to people like that? Like, how do you know when it's something that you really need to take to another level and seek some sort of help for it?
There's some information, a couple pages in one of the chapters on that. And really, it's basically if it interferes with you doing what you want to do, anything from little things to big things. Does your anxiety prevent you from socializing? Does it prevent you from being able to go to the store and buy groceries? Does it prevent you from getting out of bed in the morning and going to work on time, so it's impacting your employment? Is it impacting a relationship that's important to you? So it's really, you get to decide, but if it's something that happens on occasion, it's uncomfortable, you push yourself through it, that's probably healthy anxiety. That, you know, some anxiety is good. It's just when it becomes pervasive and it stops you from, you know, being able to perform the things you normally would in a day, that's when you probably need to talk to someone and see if, you know, there's something that can be done to help you.
Now I know why I never go to the grocery store.
Everybody's got anxiety now doing that.
Yeah, but for Jonna, it's a little bit different. Jonna doesn't think about food because she doesn't cook.
I don't cook either, so that's not a bad thing. That's okay. But, you know, 1 in 4 people in America have an anxiety issue, so that's 25% of us, and that goes up if you look at in a given year, because some people experience anxiety due to a life event, you know, a death, a divorce, you know, they get fired, like something, they go bankrupt, something happens, and then other folks, you know, have a mental illness, and it's something that they're going to struggle with their whole life. So those rates go up. So, you know, there's, you know, 4 of us here talking. So, you know, one of us, you know, has anxiety. And if you talk with folks, you'll really see how prevalent it is. And I'm really happy that and grateful that you guys invited me on in May, because May is also Mental Health Awareness Month. And that's a really exciting and hopeful time to be able to release my book and get this message out. So the timing was great, and I really appreciate that.
Well, and we're at 50%, right? Because Frankenberry openly discusses his that he deals with anxiety as well. So
yeah, I've been kind of white knuckling through this, Lori.
Good. So we're higher than average. We're great. That's good.
Why do you think it is, Lori? And maybe why isn't really the right? Because I mean, people, and I forget the exact line in your book, when you have a heart condition or you have diabetes, you have an illness. But when we talk about mental health or mental health issues, we label people differently, mm-hmm. and we label ourselves, right? And so we look at other people and we look at ourselves, and then why would mental health issues not be treated equally versus treatment options and versus mm-hmm. how we see it than any other medical condition? It's a medical condition. You're not broken. There's not something, you're not failing at being you. You have a medical issue.
Right, absolutely. And that comes down to stigma, which we also have a chapter on in the book. And my daughter's done some research in that area. And basically, you know, I think the way that comes about is if, you know, from past generations, you know, say your parents or whoever raised you never talked about mental health, you know, it was kind of that reference to, you know, that aunt we don't talk about, and no one ever discussed being stressed or having issues or being depressed in front of you. So you start to form your opinions yourself about mental health from those who are around you. And if all you ever see is the extreme examples of, you know, something on TV where, you know, something, some bad crime happened and there was someone with you know, a mental health issue, or, you know, you've just never been exposed to it as being normal, and I hate the word normal, but as normal, then you have that value, and not just towards other people who have a mental illness, but you actually hold it against yourself. And that's the part that makes it really hard for some folks to think of themselves as someone, quote unquote, like that, because it's all part of the stigma that, you know, the stigma needs to go, because there's really no valid basis for it anymore. I mean, there's been a lot of progress, you know, made in the last couple of years, but I've been really hopeful that we are just beginning to see changes in our culture, changes in treatment, changes in research around brain and neurology. I think there's going to be a great deal more happening, and it's going to be really exciting to see where we go with this in the next 10 years.
What do you hope people will get out of this book? What do you want to see happen as a result of people reading this?
What our goal is it's multifaceted. One is, if you have anxiety, we hope that you find comfort. We hope that you find hope. We are looking for you to really know you're not alone. There's nothing wrong with you. You're just someone living with anxiety, and there's lots of other people doing it too. And if you're not someone living with severe anxiety, I'm really looking for it to be a resource. I know when my kids were growing up, I was looking for some resource to not like an instructional self-help book, but something I could relate to that was genuine, that really told me like how they were feeling and what was going on, so I could get in there and help them. And I'm really hoping that it helps, you know, parents, friends, teachers, direct care workers, anyone who, professors at colleges. There's so much mental health need in our schools and in our colleges these days, that, you know, I'm really hoping that they would get, if they don't live with it, would see it through a different light. I'm really asking people to think about what the face of mental health looks like to them. And I hope it looks like me and you and your next door neighbor and your mother, because that's who it is. That's just who we all are. And I really want to get that message out there. I've been, you know, speaking with a couple of colleges who were looking to maybe do some seminars and, you know, explore if you know, having some of the professors use the book might be a good way to work on some of the stigma components. So that's what I'm hoping for.
I just wanted to add one other point, because especially now that your book is coming out now, when the globe is going through something that we have not gone through in our lifetime, most of us, unless we're 100 years old. And I think that could lead to a whole different, you know, like they say, new money and old money. This could lead to a whole different new type of anxiety for people who maybe didn't suffer from it before or suffered very little. This is going to add to it and could become something. And maybe by reading your book and being a little proactive, we can avoid it becoming worse and really being debilitating for a lot of us as we come out of this period in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really hoping so, and I'm hoping beyond reading the book, you know, that folks engage with each other, with me, you know, on my social media. You know, I talk I get questions and comments, you know, daily of people just checking in and you know, needing that reassurance, and, you know, I'm hoping we can all start talking about it, because that's how we're going to normalize it.
Well, and you've done that, you've invited your friends and people you know deal with different anxiety issues to share their stories. You're sharing your story, your daughter, your son, and you're right. The more people that openly talk about it without shame and without fear, the more you feel you don't feel as alone, and the more likely you are to seek out treatment, because there are things that help, but sometimes people are fearful of getting that stigma attached to them, so they don't seek the help that would actually benefit them. We, Lori, I would love to talk with you more. We're about wrapping up here with Lori Manny Lentini. She is the author of the brand new book, Anxiety Insights, What Gets to Us and What Gets Us Through. It is a beautifully written book, heartwarming, warm, educational, eye-opening.
And I you may think I'm biased, but I truly enjoyed this book. It's available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And what is your website, Lori, or social media if people wanted to get in touch with you and follow you?
Sure. My website is www.LoriManeyLentini.com, and my Instagram is Anxiety Insights.
Perfect. Okay. Lori, thank you so much for having the courage and the dedication and effort you put into sharing your story and putting this book together and for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, Lori. And we will be back.
Lori.
You're listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. And thanks one more time to Lori Maney-Lantini, our guest today. And we've still got some more left. We've got another segment on the way, so you stick with us. This is K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
Good morning once again, and welcome back to Happy Hour for segment number three here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello, Greg and Barry.
Oh, it's getting worse.
Oh, it is. Our segues and our hello Frankenberries are getting worse. Downhill slope. Well, thank you so much, Carol, for bringing Lori to us. She was a great guest, and thank you to your press for getting her out there.
It's a privilege. Honestly, I love doing it. I feel so passionately that we each have a story to tell and a unique voice to tell it, and playing a part in bringing someone's book to life is a privilege. It really is. And she's delightful to work with. Somebody that has a tremendous amount of insight about anxiety and mental health issues because she's lived it herself. Her children both deal with it. And she works as an executive for a large not-for-profit that helps people. So she's been very instrumental all her life in seeing this from many levels and wanting to help people. And so, interesting side note, and if you just missed it, we were talking with Lori Maney-Lantini. She's the author of Anxiety Insights. So her son, who's dealt with anxiety, just recently, Jonna, started seeking treatment. They're going to therapy for his anxiety, and it helps him tremendously. And what turned it around for him is he read Lori Gottlieb's book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. She was a prior guest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right.
So that inspired him to have the courage to go out and seek treatment, and it has definitely helped him.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. Mm-hmm. And of course, it just goes to show that we're always on the ball here.
Ahead of the game.
Yes.
Well, that's good. And I'm interested in that. I think more people, look, we all have at least a touch of it from time to time, and really more so now. I'm going to have my mother read the book because the one area that she really has anxiety in is my dog. Like, if my dogs don't eat 4,000 pounds of food a day, she'll obsess. Like, how come the dogs didn't eat 4,000 pounds of food today? They only ate, 3,500 pounds of food. Like, I don't know. Do you think they're okay? Oh, my God. It's like, mom, stop.
Look how tiny they are. They can't eat that much.
I know it. But now I'll give her a new reason to be. Oh, sorry. You go ahead.
I was just saying, I get that though, because she loves them so much. I'm the same way with Ginger. I'm that dog mom that, anything that's a little off, I freak out because she's so important to me.
Oh yeah, I'm with you there. This morning, I said to myself because I'm getting up a little bit later now, and so I don't. Instead of feeding the gang around 7 or 7:30 like I used to, I'm now feeding them closer to 9:30, quarter to 10. And I fed them this morning, and I watched, and I watched, and this is how much I paid too much attention. And I kind of looked at my wrist, and I went, should be happening sometime. And then I heard it. I'm like, yep, Bella ate too fast. She's puking. Yeah, but I believe me, I can have a little bit of anxiety if she starts doing that too much. I even had her get a blood test not too long ago because of that. I was like, is there something wrong? Because she's puking more than normal.
Cats do that, though. That's like their thing.
Right. I realize that, but...
Yeah, cats are pukers. Definitely pukers.
Yes, they are.
They are.
Pukers and hairball hackers.
They are. not to change the subject, but I want to make sure that I just add this one little follow-up from what we were talking about in our first segment today. I looked it up when we were in commercial break, and if you do possess any sort of bird feather other than a pigeon, a starling, and some other kind of no-name bird, you are going to jail.
Are you serious?
You are going to jail. You know why? Because there is a 100-year-old law under the, Bird Protection Act. Now I just lost it. It's this, like, Wildlife Protection Act from 100 years ago or 98 years ago, we were kind of right. It came about because certain birds were endangered, and they just never changed the law after that. Oh, so I'm sorry. So it's any migratory bird, you get in trouble, unless it's a pigeon feather, a starling feather, or a house sparrow feather, you go into the big house. Boom, boom, boom.
Hey, you know what? If I'm one of those three birds, though, I'm pissed. It's like, right? why did you leave us out? It's not like they can't take our feathers. You know, we could become endangered. What's so wrong with us?
Talk about discriminating against those poor little birds.
I know. That's just not fair.
No, I was just going to say, they just haven't changed the law. I would like to see how many people are actually prosecuted for finding a feather in the forest. But I ain't going to test that theory.
Yeah, the next time you invite your cop friend over, you're hiding that baby. And they didn't hear it here.
Nope, they didn't. I'm pleading the fifth. I ain't got no feather. Frankenberry, don't we have a shout out? We got a shout out.
Oh, yes.
Right?
As a matter of fact, I do. And you know what? And I have to say this, and a good friend of mine from West Virginia University, she just retired. She worked at the college radio station, so I knew her very well. But she's retired after like 31 years. And a buddy of mine, you know, saying goodbye and saying congratulations, you know, you were the best. He mentioned in there that she was always one to encourage you. And I can't even tell you. And bosses around the world, please, there is nothing more satisfying than just to get a thumbs up.
Yep.
So I got a note the other day, a message on Facebook, and it's from a friend on Facebook. Her name is Denise, and Denise, hold on a sec, I just had it. She sent us this. Hey, out of all the people being recognized for all they're doing during this crisis, I would like to acknowledge you and those that go to a barren studio, keep the music going and the updates, and most of all, happy hour. My alarm is set on Sunday at 7 o'clock just to make my day. You three are the best. Let Jonna and Carol know.
That's awesome.
Yes.
That was really, really sweet.
Yes, you know, and that's it. That made my day, and that's sometimes all you need. So again, bosses, just a little reminder. It helps.
Or any better when you see some people doing good or something you enjoy, just, you know, it's an act of kindness to let someone know you appreciate what they're doing or something about them, or, you know.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. I've read that they're in a survey a while back that if given the choice, like the majority of employees, if they had a choice between getting more money or more appreciation, they actually picked appreciation, which I guess I kind of get. And it's just so nice, especially in this time. Look, I know we're not out saving lives, but if we can do our part and give people a chuckle and give them information each and every week, bright and early on Sunday morning, then that does make me feel good. I'm glad we're able to do that for people.
Yeah.
And that was very nice of her to share.
Yeah, and it is very satisfying. And, you know, that's the one, you know, my sister said to me the other day, she's like, why do you still do what you do? She goes, you've never made any money doing it. You know, you're always on edge. And I'm like, well, you know, this particular place right here, I still have a job. So I am extremely grateful for that. But I also have, you know, in the building when things were normal, a great boss who does throw out encouragement every now and then. And you know what? I like coming here because of it. I don't give me more money in a crappy work environment. I don't know how long I'd be able to handle it.
Right.
Good point.
All right, kids.
But, but I think we can call that a wrap there, Miss Spielborg and Miss Pesky. Yep. So, again, you've been listening to Happy Hour here. Thank you so much for joining us. Our guest, Lori Maney Lantini from earlier. And eventually this show will be up at the K104 website, k104online.com/happy hour. And we'll be back again next week, 7 o'clock, same time, and we will talk to you then. Like Denise, by the way, feel free to set your alarm.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spielborg and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.